Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Ravencast. I am Adam Erickson, and this is the co-founder of the Raven Foundation. Suzanne Ross is here with me today. It is Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, Suzanne.
Same to you.
Thank you very much. We have a little bit of a late start because technology.
Yeah.
Can we have a scapegoat already?
Yes.
Technology. It's not my fault. It's not your fault, Suzanne.
No.
It's technology. It's
Yep, not loving technology right now. Uh-oh, and there you go.
We are having even more. You just froze there. So this
No,
is going to be fantastic. I froze. No,
you
technology froze.
froze.
We know who to blame here, Suzanne.
Yes,
It's
we do.
technology.
Okay, got it.
Oh man, that was like perfect timing on technology's part right there. So anyway, it's great. It's Valentine's Day, and Suzanne and I wanted to come on to talk about Suzanne's book called The Wicked Truth About Love, The Tangles of Desire, because today's Valentine's Day and it has something to do with love, right?
There you go.
I guess.
Absolutely.
You know what? I wore red today on Valentine's Day because my culture tells me that you should wear red on Valentine's Day.
Or flowers.
Or flowers. Suzanne is wearing
Flowers.
black with flowers
Flowers,
on
yes.
Valentine's Day. And here's the deal.
Okay.
This is already, we're getting into the wicked truth about love, right?
Yeah.
Because the wicked truth, I'll let you tell me what the wicked truth is, but first I'll tell you.
Yes, please do.
Part of the wicked truth is that we are formed by our culture. Our culture has these messages that tells us what to do and how to be and even whom to love. And part of this is, hey, wear red on Valentine's Day because that's what you're supposed to do, or black with flowers.
And also, what you're pointing out is that the insecurity you might feel if you get the cultural cue wrong. So the cue is to be accepted and loved and affirmed on Valentine's Day, one wears red. And you did that, and you were looking for the affirmation of your peer. And when you didn't get it, it was a little unsettling, right?
It was so unsettling because yesterday you were like, hey, let's wear red for Valentine's Day. And you didn't. And so I'm like, I am good and obedient when it comes to my culture and when it comes to Suzanne Ross. I always follow the rules.
There you go. Well,
Right?
I'm sorry I set you up for that, Adam. I didn't mean to. But what it really points out is what I was getting at in the book, about the wicked truth, which is why that happens to us. Why are we so hypersensitive to cultural cues and to feedback? From others. And it's because of the way we are constructed, the way desire works in humans, is that we always need to see ourselves and our desires reflected back to us from others. And in fact, we learn what to desire by imitating the desires of others. So Adam learned what to desire in his wardrobe on Valentine's Day from imitating the culture.
Right.
And that's natural. And that is good. It's wonderful. It's just how human beings work. The problem is when we forget that our desires are always mediated. We like to say they're triangular. In other words, there's me, there's the object of my desire, and then there's another point in this relationship, which is the source of my desire, which is often hidden from view and or
Yes.
unacknowledged in a way. And that's where the tangles of desire come in, where we run into problems and obstacles to in our relationships, not just romantic relationships, but all of our relationships.
Yes. Excellent. We've got some viewers. Daniel Kingstrom says, I have had Suzanne's book in my cart for a few days. How coincidental that you are speaking here. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
And it's a fantastic book. It's a fun book. In part, we'll get to this maybe a little later, but you bring up so many like pop culture examples and movies and television shows to explain this, and it makes it a fun read. So there's that. So there's The Wicked Truth About Love, which is, as we were saying, that we are like formed by culture. Culture has all these messages given to us, but there is also, if there's the wicked truth, there's a wicked falsehood, a wicked lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the ways that you go about discussing that is through the metaphor of the billiard ball.
Right. Right. Yeah. I was looking for a way to explain that the way in which we commonly think about where our desires come from and who we are as human beings. And I came up with this billiard ball idea because we normally think about desires as something that arise from within us. They're ours. They're uniquely ours. And when they arise, they come up out of us and they are directed towards an object that similarly, if it's another human being, has desires arising from them on the inside. The problem with that image, of course, well, that the billiard ball points out is that we can fail to make connections with one another. That way we bounce off one another instead of forming connections. Like, you know, we're encountering people, but not getting all the way to a healthy relationship, like billiard balls bouncing off one another on a table. So what I was trying to say is you got to take that idea that my desires are my own and uniquely mine, and they just arise spontaneously from within me. And when I saw that young girl or young man across the room, I loved them because it was my authentic expression of myself moving towards them. And so we need to put that aside if we're going to get at the truth about how a healthy relationship is going to evolve and be formed, right?
So yes, yeah. So how is a healthy relationship formed?
Well, the first thing is to understand where desires actually originate, right? And so there's all number of reasons why we're attracted to other people, but they're not spontaneously arising from within us. We learn what's attractive, who a desirable mate might be, what they might look like, what kind of job they might have, what their occupation might be, from messages we're getting from the culture at large, from movies, from books, from social media, from feedback from our friends who say, ooh, there's a hot so-and-so over there. And, oh, that guy is not worth your time. And those kinds of things where we're always being influenced. Our desires are always being influenced by others, which is not necessarily bad if we understand that we have a choice about whose influence we're accepting, right? So if someone is giving you advice like, you know, I wouldn't go after that guy, I've heard some bad things about him, and then you realize the reason they're telling you that is because they want to go after that guy, right? So they don't have your best interest at heart. the cultural messages we get about what is an acceptable love partner, romantic partner, is very limiting and limited. There's a certain type, there's a certain body type, there's a certain personality type that gets held up as this ideal. You know, like, I don't know who the hot people are these days, but you know, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston and all of these stars, are they're held up as, you know, who we want to look like and who we want to fall in love with.
Yes, and tragically, they often don't find love for very long because they're always informed by culture and dissatisfied when time goes on. And this is one of the tangles of desire that you point to. You have different types. So, best friend forever, right? And the rock star, the celebrity chef. And sidekick and custodian.
And
I think
custodian,
those are them, right? I
the
found myself like in these different in many of these different ones. Like one of the things about mimetic theory that people point out is this love issue where you are formed by your friends to for desires and often a love interest. When I was in high school, I had a good friend and he had a girlfriend and I was like hot after his girlfriend. Because she was fun and nice and all of these great qualities. And it brought us into some kind of a rivalry for a while. And then when I was in college, I noticed this girl who had a really nice smile and she was fairly attractive. And my friends were all like, hey, this girl's really cool and stuff. And that increased my desire for her. And fortunately, she became my wife.
Yes, it can
So
work
that's
out very
right.
well.
It can work out pretty well, yeah.
But what you were describing with your high school example is what's commonly known as the love triangle.
Right.
It's the stuff of all romantic comedies. The founder of mimetic theory, René Girard, learned about desire by reading novels about failed romantic entanglements, Madame Bovary and the French novelist, and also Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream is a classic example of friends falling in love with other friends and not understanding, why is this happening? You need to understand that it's happening because our human beings are incredibly open to one another's influence, and that's what makes love possible, and it's what makes your friendships possible. And when you share desires with other people, you become friends, and it could be the basis of a wonderful lifelong relationship as a friend, or it could blossom into a romantic relationship. But when those desires come into conflict with someone who with an object that you can't share, such as a romantic partner, that's when conflicts happen. And when you need to step back and ask yourself, am I in love with this person because my friend is in love with them? Is that where my desire originated? And you need to be able to do some critical thinking and self-analysis. Are you going to lose your friend, right? And the love interest probably won't work because you're in love with them for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, you have a great example of this from Grey's Anatomy. I think that show is still on, but there's Meredith and Derek McDreamy, who's the doctor, and in like I think it's the second season, Derek's friend Mark comes. And he shakes Meredith's hand and has some like flirtatious stuff happening. And then Derek McDreamy punches him in the face, and everybody's like, "What happened? Why did this happen?" Right? And all of a sudden, we find out that Mark has slept with Derek's previous wife, and they got on. So Mark has this habit of finding love interest through the eyes
Through Derek.
of his best friend, who is Derek McDreamy. So
Yes,
that's
it's a terrible tangle to find yourself in. And I think if you what one of the things to note about these different types is that they're patterns. It's not like I'm a fixed type and I'm destined to always, fall in love with the wrong person. These are just patterns that once you learn to identify them, you can undo them. You can consciously say, "Oh, geez, I keep falling in love with my best friend's lover. Maybe I need to think a little critically about that."
That's tough because oftentimes love is like a drug and you just can't think clearly when
No,
you're
you.
in love, right?
That is very true. I don't know what to
Yes.
tell. That's why
How
read the
do
book now before you fall into some big romantic love affair, so you can spot these things, you know?
Yes, that's good. You say that one of the things, sometimes we want to say that there's a formula to love, but you point out that there love is a mystery and this is a good thing, but that human nature is not a mystery. And that's human nature is what we've been talking about, and how your book reveals how we fall in love, why we fall in love, who we fall in love with, and the cultural aspects behind it. So that's kind of like, I guess, the science behind it or something. Behind human nature. But what's the mystery that's so good about love that you're pointing to?
Well, I think what happens is when we fall in love with someone, it is intoxicating, and we feel that we're completely known and they are completely knowable. Like we just, and it is because all barriers, obstacles to that mimetic pull towards one another are gone. And you are for a while like one human being, completely, completely merged. I just remember being astounded by that when I was my husband and I met when we were much, much younger. But it was this sort of oneness, you know, with each other, oneness with the universe. And it's a wonderful feeling. The problem is that it seduces you into forgetting that the other that you're in love with is a human being who is very complex, who's going to change and grow over time, and who may surprise you where you're thinking, well, I didn't see that coming, or I didn't sign up for this, or whatever it is, where suddenly something happens that takes you by surprise. And that's the mystery in a relationship, where that can be an obstacle where you say, oops, oh, this is not the person I thought I fell in love with. Or you can say, look at what there is still to learn about the one that I love. And is see that surprise, that mystery, as an invitation to go deeper into the relationship. And that is how you will grow as a human being, and how the relationship will grow and change over time. It's gonna change. You're gonna change, your partner's gonna change. And if you can't accept that, you know, unexpected, you know, wrinkle or monkey wrench in your expectations, then you're going to short circuit opportunities to really go deeper in the relationship.
We're about coming to the end of our time, but what your final archetype, I guess, is custodian. And one of the emphases that you have in the book is that love is a gift. It's something that, can you say more about custodian? What's the role of the custodian? You often, like, the custodian is someone who, like, cleans stuff up. Right? Does kind of the dirty work. And oftentimes we think love should be just kind of easy and boom,
Glamorous, yeah.
glamorous. And so you kind of lift up this custodian view.
Well, I think I have to thank you, Adam, because you came up with that term. We were talking about, well, what is this ideal kind of model, a way to be in a healthy relationship? And custodian, just popped up for you, and I thought it was perfect, because more than the work aspect of it, what I loved about it was that the unglamorous aspect of it, the unsungness of it. You know, a custodian is doing their job and their work without expecting you to come over and clean their house. Do you know what I mean? There's not
No.
this sort of sense of, I'll do it for you do it for me kind of pattern that we can get in relationships, where we say, I take out the garbage, you empty the dishwasher, and God forbid, you don't hold up your end of it, then I'm not emptying the dishwasher next time, and whatever, so you can get into these sense of I'll do something for you, but I expect you to do something for me. And that is not, that is typically how we think of gift giving. We're always giving gifts, sort of feeling an obligation to give the type of gift that that person gave to us. We're always in gift giving relationships. There are unspoken rules, and if you violate them by giving a gift that's more expensive or less expensive or not as big a deal or too little, you can get resentment on the part of the person receiving. But in a love relationship, the giving, it has no expectation of receiving in return. The only thing that is expected, and this is where trust comes in, is that the other person values your relationship more than they value anything else. And they would be willing to do, to give, to even sacrifice what's most dear to them for your sake, without expecting anything in return, but knowing and trusting that you also are as committed to the relationship as I am. So it's a sense of understanding that there's a transcendent third point in our relationship. There's you, there's me, and there's the thing that we value more than anything else in the world, and that's us together. And so really? that's why we were talking about the custodian in that sense of giving without expecting thank you notes and gifts in return and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Daniel makes a great connection. Social exchange ideals versus giving in a kenotic sense. So this is Daniel bringing in the theology. Nicely done. Yes.
Very well done. And you know, Adam, what you said at the beginning, we were teasing about scapegoating in technology. You know, it's like there's always something out there we can scapegoat. And yeah, it just struck me that this pattern of love that I just described is sort of the healthy triangle, the healthy way of subverting the scapegoating relationship. So instead of expelling someone or something in order to find a bond, we find a bond over our shared commitment to one another. So it's the complete opposite inversion of scapegoating. And people do form bonds. You know, you can form bonds over shared likes, over shared hates, you know. but this pattern of putting that relationship ahead of everything else is what allows you to go deeper with another person and really, you know, really have a strong, enduring, healthy relationship.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Suzanne. And once again, the book is called The Wicked Truth About Love, The Tangles of Desire. So you can go deeper into this topic by going and getting the book. And Dan, go ahead.
May I say one thing? I think that it's, I was just reading some articles about the high school age, you know, teenagers and the volatility of relationships and so forth. I mean, some of the examples in my book may not work for teenagers because they may not be familiar with the shows or whatever, but the types would be really helpful for parents and teens to sit down and talk together about this, because boy, the heartbreak in high school is just it's heartbreaking. And so to have a way to think through what's happening with your teen, I think it would be really, really valuable.
Yep. Yep. Danielle says that she is writing about this very topic. So Danielle, let us know when your what it is that you are writing is coming out, and we will put it up here too. So kenotic, like that's you know, that's when the Christ comes in and gives of himself Paul talks about the kenosis. It's really good. And perichoresis is also another Christian term about this as well, the eternal giving and receiving of God among God's self. This is for Christians, I guess, this is the ideal of what you're talking about in this relationship of eternal giving and receiving. So we look forward to your book, Danielle, and thank you everybody for watching. And you can stay up to date on the Ravencast at the Raven Foundation Facebook page. And until next time, grace and peace be with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.